again, and welcome to the Practical Practice Partners podcast series. I'm T. Hoffman, and I'm here with Mary Kazmarek, and we're your hosts.
That's right. Our goal is to provide attorneys with practical advice on law firm management issues, including business development, leadership, and so many other topics. T, let's get started.
All right.
So today, we're going to talk about non-performing partners. Non-performing partners? I've heard of performing seals and other types of performers, but I need to know about these non-performing partners. I'm kidding, of course.
Yes.
But you're going to explain that, what's meant by that term to us. And in the meantime, let's just kind of reflect on the fact that the leading international consultancy to law firms, Altman Weil, reported that 83% of law firms admitted in a 2018 survey that they had chronically underperforming partners caused by weak business development skills. So let's talk a little bit about
that. Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting number in that a couple of different ways. One, that as business development coaches and consultants, you would think the natural answer then to non-performing partners would be what? To strengthen their business development skills, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think what's happened in most law firms, and with 83% saying openly that they have non-performing partners, and I'm betting there are several others who weren't willing to admit they had non-performing partners.
Higher percentage, yeah.
Right. I don't think you can blame it just on the lack of business development skills. I think we kind of got to look underneath the hood and see what's causing this problem. And I think there are a lot of historic issues, and you and I are, we're not old, okay? But we're older. Mary's looking at me like, we are not old. But, I mean, at the end of the day, we both practiced law for a long time. We've been in different roles within law firms, both in business development and strategy and marketing. And we have seen a lot of things and coached a whole lot of people.
Well, and we've seen, I think it's important to point out, T, that we have seen so many in the 20 plus years that we've been involved in this profession. We've seen so many positive developments, truly positive developments. One I want to highlight is the fact that women and people of color are, and I think we're past the tipping point. I think based on my own experience, what I see in the clients I work with, we're past the tipping point. We've tipped to the point where women and people of color are taking on leadership, demonstrating business development's excellence, as of course we knew they would, but now these opportunities are becoming available to everyone in the law firm setting. We have a ways to go, no doubt about it, but we are well on that way. So that's a great positive. We want our firms to reflect the diversity of the people that we serve, like any business. Oh, I said like any business, T.
Oh, you're right.
So do we go back to this performance issue now? Let's talk a little bit about that.
I think that one of the drivers of this issue has been that law firms have been forced to operate as businesses. And I think when you and I began to practice law in the late 80s, that really we weren't operating like businesses at all. And I think it's become more important than ever for law firms to understand that they are businesses and that they have to begin to operate as businesses. And even though it may not be as comfortable for some law firms as others, I think obviously if you're an Am Law 100 firm and you have those finance people and you have your business development staff and marketing staff and you're doing a whole lot of internal training and things like that, it may be somewhat easier. Having said
I think it's, you know, just to say, I think we can agree that In just about every Am Law 100 firm, it is accepted to reach a certain level of profitability. It is accepted that we are a business organization, a for-profit organization, and there's nothing wrong with that. And by the way, people have to adhere to certain standards of behavior and, here's that word again, performance.
And performance.
In order to be part of our organization. In particular, you think about partners. Partners are owners. They're shareholders. So we expect to see that group in particular, that class, if you will, performing in a way that is consistent with standards that have been set.
I think that you're absolutely right. And performance is measured in a lot of different ways in firms, regardless of their size. I have firms that I work with, and I'm sure you have some that may measure differently than mine, but some are based on collections, how much the attorney is bringing in. Some are based totally on a revenue number. We want you to reach this amount of revenue. And there's a difference between collections and revenue, as everybody should know. And then some of them are totally based on hours. You bill this many hours, we don't care how much you collect.
Well, and what about this notion of, amazing to some firms, you know, that regardless of how many hours you're billing and how much you're collecting, you still may not be profitable.
I mean, and it's amazing to me how many law firms still aren't measuring profitability, and it's hard, and there's no simple way to do it, but it is something you should try to get your arms around, because think about it, even if you're off, and I often tell firms this, by 4 or 5% in your profitability, if that number is coming in below a certain percentage, and it should be north of 30%, then you're probably not as profitable as you want to be.
So, yeah, when we talk then about partners, owners, shareholders who are not meeting the performance standards that have been set by their firms, we might say that that could be adjusted through through their income, through their compensation. But there are better ways to do that, aren't there, T?
There are certainly
better ways. I mean,
don't
you want to kind of nip that in the bud? And in some cases, you really need to have a cultural shift in your organization in order to, and I know you're going to talk about this, but for fairness sake, to make sure standards are communicated clearly, right? And you also don't want to wait until just once a year to send people a correction message.
I think that's exactly right. And I think for many lawyers and leaders in law firms, it's very difficult to have those conversations because historically, they probably didn't have those conversations. They were not had with them. But I think the shift that you're talking about, Mary, is something that law firms are going to have to embrace. And we're going to have to become really leaders of people in a different way. And by leading them, I don't mean just telling them these are the standards, although that's really important. And I certainly think that's something everybody should understand, and it should be communicated often. But I think we're also going to have those hard conversations with them when they're not meeting those standards. And we're going to have to do that on a quarterly basis. Or we're going to have to do that in an in-person meeting over lunch. Or we're going to have to pry and ask, what are the issues impacting your performance? Mm-hmm. Because many times these non-performers have things going on in their lives that are impacting their performance.
Yes. And like everyone does.
Like everyone does from time to time. And it could be that that's an issue. It could be that, for example, when the economy went to hell in a handbasket in 2007, 8, 9, 10, bankruptcy and foreclosure lawyers were just so busy they couldn't even stand it. Then the economy turns around, and what are those guys doing? They're spinning in their chairs. So it could be because of their practice area that they're non-performing, and that's an issue you've got to get in front of,
right?
Obviously.
Right.
And it could be something like, I have lawyers who literally say they're not happy with the practice, or they're going through some type of depression or anxiety or things like that. They could be using alcohol or drugs. And as leaders, we need to address those kinds of issues, even though you might not physically see it. You need to find out what's going on.
I think what I'm hearing you say, the sort of the thread that's running through your comments, is we have to get to a point where, as businesses, because we are for-profit organizations, where we normalize, where it is normal, in other words, to have business conversations with our fellow partners, the leaders of the firm, the head of practice groups, other, you know, people in other types of leadership roles. It has to become just part of doing business, where we're regularly talking about how are you doing, what's going on, what can we do to help you, and it's a two-way street, isn't it? That's got to go back, start going back and forth, and the only way that change is ever going to occur. It's not people aren't just going to be magically transformed. There needs to be a shift in leadership, I think.
I think you're exactly right. And it's just as important to have those same conversations with people who are performing well, because there's nothing like giving people praise. And so those performers that are performing well obviously need to be recognized as well. And maybe those people, once you recognize them, you may glean some things from those individuals that you can actually use to help your non-performing partners.
Can I tell a quick anecdote? Because
sure.
I know you're going to share with us five specific points on this issue of how do we address the issue of a person in our firm, a partner in our firm, who is not meeting our profitability standards in terms of the work that they're doing, what they're collecting, etc. But I want to just tell a quick story. I have a coaching client who is with an Am Law 100 firm. This woman is brilliant. She is, and not only brilliant, but she's one of the nicest people I've had the opportunity to work with in a long time. Just a genuine, kind, honest individual. And in our coaching work, a theme has come up on a fairly regular basis of her fear. Now, she is a non-equity partner at her firm seeking to become an equity partner, a full participating partner in the firm and its profitability. And her fear, her constant fear, and I can't think of another way to put it, because it is kind of a, it's a bugaboo that haunts her on a regular basis, comes up regularly in our coaching conversation. She's so afraid that she will not meet her billable hours on an annual basis. And she finds herself sometimes just taking whatever project comes along just to be able to put hours in the column. You know, she's told me a couple times that she, you know, sometimes lays awake at night, or it bothers her when she should be off enjoying family activities. And I finally said to her the other day, you are too good for this. You are too good to be worrying all the time about the hours issue. What we have to do is what business people do. Let's get with your practice group leader. Let's get with some colleagues in your practice, maybe firm leaders, other firm leaders, I should say, and let's just have a good conversation about the projects that you can be staffed on, the work that you want to participate in business building teams with regard to, et cetera, so that we can just slay this dragon once and for all. You know, I think to some extent it is a her issue. It's her natural personality style to worry, but it's also just a business issue that we need to take care of.
Yeah,
and
I think you're
right. Forthright about it. It doesn't have that same power over us. But tell me the five pointers that you were going to describe.
Well, I think it's really important as a leader in a law firm that you set expectations from day one. And obviously, when we hire someone as an associate or even as a lateral, we expect them to meet performance standards. But many times I coach lawyers who tell me that the performance standards are squishy. You know, they're squishy. And so they really don't know exactly how many hours they're supposed to put in, or there's a minimum, but they don't know what will happen if they don't meet the minimum. Or there's a minimum number of revenue, dollar revenue, that they need to bring in, but they don't know what happens if they don't bring that in. So clarifying what the standards are on the front end, I think, would lead to more performance on your and really energize people because they had some clarity about what was going on. So I think that's really important.
And maybe not just clarify once, but, you know, have regular conversations about, is this still, you know, the mark you need for me to hit?
I think that's right.
To do a good job and to meet your standards.
I think that's exactly right. And I have talked to many firms that hire people simply because they have a great book of business, but they bring that book of business, and that book of business maybe is not as profitable as it should be, or they don't get the book of business to come over with them. All of those issues can be addressed on the front end. And so I think that's important. Address the issues on the front end about what your expectations are.
Good. What else?
The second thing is begin, if business development skills is something that's going to set your firm apart, your ability to not only go out and get business, but to retain it. If that's truly important to your firm, and most firms say it is, then you need to start developing your lawyers early and often.
I could not agree with you more on that point.
Now, I will tell you, I was a total advocate of not starting to develop your lawyers until year three or four when I began consulting. But I have changed, and I will tell you why. The reason I have changed so much is, one, the lawyers that are coming out today, they want to be challenged. And they actually have the technological skills and the ability to do so much more than I did, I will say, when I was a first to 3 year associate.
May I comment on that point, too? Something that I have noticed also recently with my more junior coaching clients, and by junior I mean age-wise, their peers that they went to college with and perhaps business school, law school with, who have gone into business careers, not professional service like a law practice, those peers of theirs are increasingly getting greater opportunities based on their talent, based on their technology skills, based on their ability to innovate.
Yes.
We've seen CEOs of companies and chief legal officers who are people, you know, in their early 30s.
Oh, yes.
In some cases, even younger. So if we have a more junior person in our law firm age-wise and recently from law school, that person has a lot of potential to the extent to build business, not 5 years from now, but now.
I agree with you, and I do believe it's important to establish a baseline of skills. It's important for them to be good lawyers, and they need to learn to be good lawyers. But just as with any other business, everybody has to learn the business. But it doesn't mean they can't also go out and create relationships and long-lasting relationships with clients and learn the skills that are necessary to be successful over time.
And or, you know, here's the thing too. I mean, going to a junior partner, somebody who you get work from, who's guiding you in your career as a an attorney recently out of law school, that person can go with you.
Yes.
On business development calls.
They certainly can.
You know, can coach you.
That's
with regard
exactly
to the
right.
conversations. There's no, business people don't say to themselves, oh, my friend so-and-so who I was so close to, an undergraduate and who I really like, why is he bringing his dad or his uncle
right.
or his cousin or his sister to this business meeting? No, they say, here's my friend, he's great, and he's bringing his colleague. This is going to be a terrific conversation.
I mean, I remember working at Dotson Parker Shipley and Bim years ago, and Harlan Dotson taking me to lunch meetings all the time. And he was certainly much older than I was, but he was not afraid to take me and introduce me to clients. And I think that's really important. And I mean, right out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this, we talk about these skills for these junior lawyers, but what happened when all lawyers were fat and happy, we did hire lawyers that we told them, you don't ever have to go out and develop business. You know, we want you to be in the firm doing work, because we have that select group of about 20 rainmakers in our, you know, 100 member firm. And those folks are bringing in the work, and we need you to do the work. And then all of a sudden, the paradigm shift happened. And now those people are expected to go out and get work, and we're calling them non-performers. When the reality is, many of these people have not been trained to go out and get business. And in fact, some of them should never go out of their office and get business. Having said that, that does not mean they can't contribute to business development success.
Agreed.
Those same people can write blogs, they can help write speeches.
That's right.
They can actually be introduced to clients, and many of them are very good at that. And so don't write off training people who are late in their career, but you know, I have got clients that are in their 60s that have come to coaching for the first time.
So you've talked about setting standards, making sure your firm clearly communicates performance standards, and for the performers themselves to be checking in early and often on those. Also pushing business development down to a probably a more junior level in terms of experience than we have in the past. You've got three other tips for us.
I've got three other tips, so let's get those started. The other thing I will tell you is to truly track performance all the time. Practice group leaders, industry team leaders, managing partners at every level, you should be tracking performance. You should be both praising great performers, as we discussed earlier, and you should be talking to non-performers and assessing what is maybe causing them to either perform well or not perform well.
And you know, those are such good points, because you know, if the managing partner only shows up on your doorstep when something is wrong,
mm-hmm.
you know, people are going to stay out of their offices or make sure they take the afternoon off. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
You don't want to be like the Grim Reaper
no.
To your colleagues. So this idea of normalizing or standardizing the feedback process, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, very important.
And transparency. I have many law firms where people can open up the practice group report and they can look and see how everybody in their practice group is
mm-hmm.
performing. A lot of firms don't like that. It does cause some competition, and sometimes that can be positive and sometimes it can be negative, but you can't really criticize what you don't analyze.
Well said.
The other thing I will tell you I've seen firms do is just continue to lower compensation for non-performers without actually having those hard conversations. And my take on that is that one, that's almost cruel, because these people know
them in
not
front
performing.
Of a select group of
and
clients
as a general
that are
rule,
within a certain
they
industry
feel bad
group
about
or a niche area,
and if they don't feel bad about
some
it,
expertise,
they're probably people
that they haven't
need
been
to
exposed
to
anyway.
Before. So all of those
but
kinds
I will
of
tell
things
you,
are
if
important.
You go to them
and then
and
the
you
other
say,
thing
what
I would tell you,
help
even
you?
Though you're
coaching?
Trying to
is
be,
it training?
This is really a
is
tip. Even though you're trying to be kind to these people because you're letting them hang on.
This is point number four.
Yes. If you're actually not setting standards, communicating standards, tracking performance, then my point number four is that you are actually being cruel, not kind. Because underperformers are actually a cancer on your entire organization because other people notice that they are not performing. So if you expect everyone to perform, but you've got a couple of people that you just let slide, just know that you're setting a bad example for everyone else in the organization. And that, in my opinion, is a failure to lead.
Well, you know, it's so interesting, isn't it, T? Because, you know, we know that, for example, we are always going to have difficult conversations as part of our business life. I mean, that's just, you know, wherever people work, you know, misunderstandings, disagreements are going to come up. And just like we have to deal with client complaints, that will happen to all of us, no matter how great we are at what we do. Every once in a while, we might miss the mark, especially when it comes to service. We have to have those discussions with clients. We also have to have discussions with colleagues that are not the easiest in the world.
Right.
Why did you do this? How did that happen? Not in a nasty way. I mean, if it is abnormal behavior, it will be perceived as nasty or unpleasant. But if it's typical of if we hold ourselves to high standards and we have these conversations with everybody on a regular basis, how are you doing? Let me ask you to address this. How about adjusting that? It just becomes part of our culture.
I think you're absolutely right. And I will say this, the last thing that I often tell firms is when they find out that a partner is not performing. Sometimes it's because they've just lost the zeal for the practice of law, but it could be that they could be perfectly suited to be your pro bono partner or your diversity partner, or they could do something incredible for the firm that you may not have thought of, and you may be able to retain that person.
Well, I want to share just a quick anecdote as we're getting ready to wrap up here on that point. I had the great pleasure of working with an Am Law 100 firm's large practice group, almost 100 people in the past week. And as part of that, I did individual interviews with various members of the practice, very sophisticated DC-based law practice. And one person with whom I spoke described to me his position at the firm as a non-practicing lawyer who serves client needs for information, for training, for programming. And I was so intrigued by that. And I started asking questions about how did this come to be? Do you enjoy this? And he said, you know, I love what I do now.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love it. I'm an important member of my practice group. I am client facing all the time.
Right.
I am not billing hours. I'm not a revenue generator, but I support all of our major client relationships, and they want to have an attorney who is deeply, you know, steeped in the substance of our practice, interfacing with them, communicating with them, helping them all the time when it comes to education and other programming. What a perfect way.
I mean, it's perfect. Be creative.
To repurpose.
Repurpose.
Somebody
is a great
who
word.
Is not particularly interested in law practice, but can make a tremendous contribution.
I mean, I think that's
it's
perfect.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win. And so, you know, to end this, what I would like to do is to encourage law firm leaders, especially, to be proactive about addressing non-performing partners. And there are so many things that you can do if you have the courage to do it.
I think that's right. And, you know, I love this idea of taking charge of your legal career. Every lawyer, I mean, that's your most important asset that you own for most of us is
mm-hmm.
our legal career, the blood, sweat, and tears we've invested in it. So take charge of it also, not just as a leader,
right,
but as a practicing attorney, and make sure you're having these open, you know, conversations
right.
about performance-related issues.
I think that's fantastic. Well, Mary, thank you so much for coming and participating again in the Practical
I love it.
Practice Partners podcast series. We'll be back with some other podcasts for you in the coming week. And so, everybody, go have a great week. And Mary, Just before we go, Mary's at Skillful Means Marketing, and you can reach her at mary@skillfulmeansmarketing.com. And yep. I'm at Law Strategy Corp and Sane T. Hoffman at Law Strategy Corp. So look us up, give us your feedback, and subscribe to our podcast, please. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.